Y'all ready for this? We're back. You are listening to episode number 190 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast.
Y'all ready for this?
Gentlemen, and yes, welcome back to yet another exciting episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. After the braving the hell that is winter, even though technically winter isn't over yet, we are officially back and ready to go 100%. Kicking off 2015. Holy shit.
Woo!
I hope everybody had a happy new year. I hope everybody had a great time. You got what you wanted for Christmas. But we don't waste time here. So let's get right into it. Joining us, resident reporter on the scene, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Hey, what's going on, pals and gals? I was walking down the street the other day. I think I got some crushed raven on my shoe. I don't know where that came from, but it's kind of nasty.
Calling out you all, you Baltimore fans. Joining us from our Tokyo our Tokyo desk, Jonathan Cartwright. Jonathan.
Hi, and I've got this craving for pudding pops. I can't understand why.
Moving on, joining us from the bowels of hell, Taser. Taser, welcome back.
Welcome.
Konnichiwa, bitches.
What you don't know is Taser's nickname is Beelzebub.
Bubba.
A.K.A. Bubba.
I like Bubba.
That's Beelzebub's nickname. Hey, Bubba, how you doing?
Yeah, I like Bubba. That'd be awesome. A big-ass demon named Bubba.
Bubba. There probably is. That's probably like some like big farmer who hates gay people's personal hell. Did take it up the rear from Bubba. So either way, we don't pull punches, clearly. We are the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast. In case this is your first time listening, thank you for listening, by the way. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel Comics related. And when we mean everything, we mean everything, as evident by our last show, 2014. So with that being said, Brian, what do we have 2015 to kick off with? Yes, grammatical errors for the win.
Yes.
Oh, Iggy, never change, you magnificent bastard. Okay, so I guess we'll start off with this bit of casting news. I guess we'll lead off with that. It was recently announced before we went on hiatus that Kristen Ritter had landed the role of Marvel's Jessica Jones in the forthcoming Netflix series, a.k.a. Jessica Jones. One of the lingering casting rumors, however, was a co-star role or a person that would appear in Jessica Jones first before starring in his own forthcoming Netflix series, Luke Cage, who, if you know anything about your comics lore, they got a thing going on.
They do have a baby.
Yes, they do.
I got jungle fever. We got jungle fever.
Now, see, I was being all smooth with Billy Paul when he jumps in with jungle fever, and it's just...
Yeah, because we know how Cage gets down.
Actually, we know how Jessica Jones likes to get down, if you know who.
Oh!
Oh! No.
On all fours.
So, recently they announced... Not recently, actually just right after we went on break, they announced we were playing Luke Cage in Jessica Jones, and then in Luke Cage, Mike Coulter.
The campaign for Cruiser Cage is officially over.
It will never end! It'll never end!
It's over, dude.
Always Cruise for Cage.
He's not canon anymore. He's now a fanfic. He's not canon.
Fuck you! Fuck you! He will be!
So,
anyway...
Go ahead and give us the bio of Mike Coulter.
Yeah. He's not really a... He hasn't really had his so-called big break, so to speak. He's been in a bunch of supporting roles before now. He's appeared in The Good Wife, in American Horror Story Coven. I think he was in The Following at one point. He was also in the Xbox original series Halo Nightfall. He was in that. So he hasn't really had his so-called big break yet, but this could very well be it.
He's not Terry Crews.
He is not Terry Crews. That is a very big con against him. That's a very big, comes down. He's not Terry Crews. And
I think look-wise, he's got it. I don't know anything about his acting skills. I've never seen him in any of the shows he's in. I think he...
Do we have a picture of him?
Yeah, there's a picture of him in the link.
Yeah, I
can
get a picture. Hang on, I'll post one up for you.
You know, I think he can do it. Obviously, he's not Terry Crews, you know, which I think is ideal. But given who he is, you know, given that this is a guy shot, I think he could do it based on looks, based on what I've seen. You know, it'd be cool. And it's cool that he's going to be showing up in Jessica Jones.
As the resident black man, I think it should
be.
We
now go to our man on the street. Taser. Taser, what do you say?
That's right. You know, A-Train not being here, or else I would share this duty with A-Train. But, you know, since he's not... No, I don't see it. Sorry, no.
I don't see it.
He's bald, that's it. He just got bald black guy. No, Terry Crews, hello. Luke Cage is more than just bald black guy.
You're not wrong, because Terry Crews is Luke Cage, and the fact that no one else sees this is hard thinking.
Luke Cage is massive, meaty, you know, D. This guy is
pretty. He's pretty.
Yeah. He's somebody who puts on, he manscapes and probably wears a lot of cologne. And
I don't think he spent any time in prison, but I think he spent time in a youth church group. That's what
I think. Yeah, he probably eats veggies. You know, Luke Cage doesn't eat vegetables. Luke Cage eats meat. You know, this guy was He-Man during the 90s, you know, when he was all nice and lean and ate fucking tofu.
You know, not many people could rock the open-fronted shirt and tiara, and Mike Coulter, I don't think, can rock the open-fronted shirt and tiara.
You know who could rock that?
Who could rock that, Taser?
Terry Crews! Oh, that's right.
Say it
that's
again!
That's right, damn it.
So, yeah, we're not happy.
Fucking hell.
I was never was I, okay. Go listen to other episodes. If I was on the Terry Crews gun, I think Terry Crews ultimately is the better fit. I think I'm gonna give this guy a fair shot. I'm gonna see what he does in Jessica Jones. I think he's gonna be fine. I think he'll be fine.
He looks like Luke Cage's younger brother.
Well, Luke Cage is gonna be young in this, so why not? Not that young though. He doesn't look that young.
Like Luke Cage's daughter, all grown up.
Wow. So he's feminine.
I'm calling
okay.
you out, Mike Coulter.
Luke Cage is angry. This guy doesn't look like he can be angry.
You're looking off of one picture, though. I'm just saying, I'm looking at
a bunch of pictures of Mike Coulter. And
Let's see how he is in the actual role. I'm saying give the guy a chance because we haven't seen anything yet. Let's give the guy a chance.
Okay.
We're going off of profile shots, which does not give anything on an actor. So that's all I'm saying. Let's give the guy.
The second they said Topher Grace was Venom, I knew it
face,
was a
this face. Guy should be the voodoo. That's who this guy should be.
No,
voodoo.
He doesn't look Haitian enough.
Haitian.
Isn't that what it's called?
Okay. Doesn't look Haitian.
From Haiti?
No, you gotta
properly. It just doesn't look Haitian enough.
John, go ahead and do it.
Well, I'm looking at it this way. I'm trying to get the mental image of Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, you know, together. And at least with Terry Crews, I could see Jessica Jones being put in a wheelchair afterwards. And this guy, I just can't see that. I don't see the eyes bulging out, you know, in the holy cow routine. And but on a more serious note, I will have to wait and see how he does it. I was really hoping to see Terry Crews get it, even though I knew that he probably wouldn't, because he's got so many irons in the fire, so to speak. I mean, he's everywhere right now.
He's a busy man. He is all over the place.
I mean, but he would have been perfect. I mean, I could see him saying "Sweet Christmas" and people and daring people to, you know, look at him wrong for saying that. And it just, he's like, man, I remind you, I can put you in a wheelchair.
Damn it.
But you know. It's going to be, we'll just have to see how it goes. I mean, but I still have good hopes for all of the Netflix stuff, even though I won't be able to see it until it comes out on DVD like ages afterwards, unless I can finally get out of the 20th century into 21st century. Yeah, I know. I'm getting my ways taken, you know, established. But it's a slow but painful process, much like, you know, Jessica Jones getting in a wheelchair.
This time of need. Or taser is, rather, I should say.
Yep. But, yeah, that's pretty much what I will I'll leave it at. And we'll just have to – it's the wait-and-see routine, you know, the usual spiel on that. So, wheelchair.
Mm. All right, so enough of the negativity. Let's move on to something even more awesome, at least perceived as awesome. Brian, we got some release dates.
Yes, we do. Speaking of Netflix, we finally got an official release date for Marvel and Netflix's Daredevil series. You will be able to enjoy the exploits of the Man Without Fear in New York City on April 10th, 2015.
I'm so ready. I'm not even...
My body is ready.
I'm so ready for that. It's going to be Frank Miller's Daredevil on TV. It's going to be great.
Well, I'm not talking about the Frank Miller part of it, but hey.
Don't you deny his run. Don't you deny his run because you don't like him as a person. Don't deny the excellence that is his Daredevil.
Fine. I will say, however, that I will enjoy seeing yet another blind man overcome such adversity. The first one adversity I saw were those refs in the NFL games for the last few weeks, which is just absurd.
Don't get me fucking started.
I know, I'm making sports ball references for you comic book nerds out there, and you probably don't understand what I'm saying. So, moving on from that, we have another release date. One that may cause a bit more trepidation in fans, if you dare say so. If you've been listening to the show for a while...
Can you do this in Cajun accent? Can you do a Cajun accent?
I can't do Cajun. It's the one. It's the one thing I can't do.
Well, not me.
Oh, that's it.
I'm not saying good. But.
If you've been following the show, you know that Channing Tatum has been lobbying for the role of Gambit in Fox's X-Men universe.
Hey, mon ami.
And he's got it. He's got it. Not only does he have it, but he has a Gambit solo flick set to be released on October 7th, 2016.
Which is several months after Age of Apocalypse, which makes me wonder, is he going to show up in Age of Apocalypse?
Well, considering that it's
not called Age of Apocalypse. It's just called Apocalypse, right? Right.
I think it's actually Age of Apocalypse.
Okay, that's weird. They should just call it Apocalypse. You know, is there anything else? Daredevil, excited, super excited. We already know how much I love Daredevil, and he belongs in New York City before it became gentrified. I don't know. Is it gentrified? I don't know.
It's being.
Okay, but...
Ask Taser about gentrification. Okay, yeah.
Well, the area current...
Taser, you know something about gentrification, right?
I actually do. I see, like, Central Park West.
Yoga places everywhere. Harlem and
parts of Brooklyn and Jamaica, Queens. Yeah, I see. Actually, I do see gentrification.
Yes, Mom.
But,
Gentrification. Okay, I'm excited for Daredevil. Super excited for Daredevil. It's a very low bar, but he can do a better job. He has to do a better job than Taylor Kitsch, right? And well, I don't entirely blame Taylor Kitsch because that movie was completely terrible.
Yeah. Considering that he grew up in the South, in the Gulf region.
There's a difference between South and in what Gambit has to sound like. You know, Taylor Kitsch didn't have a Cajun accent at all. And
he's
I'm not
Canadian.
Fucking... Well, yeah, but it's like, to me, I know I'm not like, well, they're going to do what they want. Like, no, but to make it Gambit, outside of giving him a coat, weird-ass stupid headgear, and a staff, and throwing cards, and energy-sipping powers, or energy-transferring powers, is that what it is?
Like he can kinetically charge objects.
There you go. And that cool sound effect from the 90s cartoon, you know, one of the things that makes Gambit...
Oh, they need to do that.
He has to have the suave, which I think Channing Tatum can pull off the suaveness that is Gambit.
He has range. He's shown
the thing is,
what,
I
Dear John?
What? Wait, what's Dear John?
The only thing I ask for in Channing Tatum and the team behind this is that they make an effort to have him do the accent thoroughly and as best as he can. And not
just get a coach to help him through
that. Yes, because He's from Cajun country. That's who he is.
It's part of his identity.
He's from the bayou.
Exactly. Make it. I guarantee. Like that's what makes him. That's what makes Gambit Gambit, and that like you know. And he like a lot of people my age love him because of that cartoon, and he was badass, and it was him. For me as a kid, it was either him or Wolverine. You like fuck Cyclops because he's a wet blanket.
Fuck you, I like Cyclops.
You're weird. But like you know, yeah, it's easy to do the throwing cards. It's easy to give him the bow staff. It's easy to give him the badass coat. It's easy to make him suave. And they gave him all that in Origins. What they didn't do. Well, okay, maybe not the suaveness, because that wasn't really evident. But they didn't have the accent.
They didn't give him screen time in X-Men Origins. So it's like, bye, Gambit.
Exactly. And it's like, I really want the accent to work. That's all I want. Even if we can't fucking understand him at points, I want the accent. I'm done.
Okay, I guess I'll go next. Super excited for Daredevil. And, you know, I've sort of come around to the idea, mostly because I don't have a choice in the matter anymore, but also because I realize Channing Tatum has some legitimate acting ability. You know, he has enough range, I think. Yes, taser, range. What the fuck is
that? Yeah, the only range he's got is in the rifle range. Whatever. Maybe horses.
Okay. I mean, he's got comedy. He can do serious bits. Granted, not that I've seen a whole lot more of the latter part. I've seen much more of the first part.
Yeah, range.
Mm-hmm. Well, is what it is.
Bullshit! 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 Sorry.
So I'm
bullshit. I'm sorry.
I'm kind of siding with Ben on this one. It's a low bar I'm setting because, you know, I've always been the kid who didn't like Gambit and, you know, Gambit. I never saw the appeal, really. But in Channing Tatum's hands, I'm a little more optimistic. Not much, but, you know, it is what it is. And it's happening now. No stopping it, so we'll see.
There's no stopping us now.
Taser, what do you think about Gambit, friend?
Hmm? Well, I'll say this. I liked the character when he first showed up in X-Men. You know, he was different. You know, his swagger set him apart from most of the other male characters in Marvel Universe at the time, or since. Pardon me. I kind of smiled when he shows up. With Taylor Kitsch playing him in X-Men, not X-Men movies, number one. You know, the whole... He was watered down. I mean, that was really it. That movie was just set up so that it could have Wolverine and a bunch of people that comic fans might remember or recognize, but it's not really them because we just want them to come in and see the movie and then rave about it, even though most of them will hate it. But the kids will love it. That should have been the title of that movie.
Mostly because the kids won't pay attention to proper character development or story pacing or any of those willy-nilly things that people like
or,
to see.
Or common sense for all intents and purposes. It's just people with powers and Wolverine. So, yeah. I'll be perfectly honest, Taylor Kitsch, his version of Gambit, I couldn't hate it because it's not his fault because he simply did what they gave him to do. You know, they didn't do the eye thing and, you know, he had a staff, but it was, you know, whatever. And he didn't have that swagger, really. You know, he kind of carried an attitude, but he didn't have the swagger. He wasn't cool. You know, as cool as Gambit is.
He wasn't cool.
Yeah, he wasn't. You know,
I get what you're saying.
He was chill, but he wasn't cool. Gambit is cool.
Yeah. He was chill. He was like, he seemed like a bro. He seemed much more like a bro.
Yeah, he was dude, bro, dude.
Well, Remy LeBeau, I am, brother.
I didn't hate it. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't somewhere I could get, hey, you know, that guy by his acting. Now, I do think he could pull it off with his looks and everything else can be, you know, coaching and, you know, maybe some proper dialogue. I don't have a problem with that. But Channing Tatum.
Not a fan, are you, Taser?
No, no. To be fair, I've seen a few movies of Channing Tatum that I liked. And the ones that I haven't wasn't because he was in it. You know, I don't dislike him. But when I think of Gambit, you know, Mr. Mon Cher, and, you know, I guarantee and all that other stuff, you know, Crawfish, you know, I don't see Channing Tatum, and I'm trying to picture, you know, them letting his hair grow long and, you know.
He's never had long hair. Even back when he was in fucking that dance movie, whatever the fuck that was. He never had long hair. He's always kept it, like, cropped short. Right. So.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen him with the long hair at all. And I'm trying to imagine them doing the eye thing, which they didn't have for Taylor Kitsch. And something tells me they might do that for this because, you know, you want to see your heroes, you know, you want to see the characters that you like at any rate look as much as possible. But since we're in a day and age where costumes are kind of passe, you know? Yeah, I don't think we have too much to look forward to. Even though Gambit, minus like the leggings and the boots, Gambit's costume you can kind of do stuff with. I mean, the major part of it is like the freaking trench coat and the staff, you know? So I want to see what they do in regards to that with Tatum, because let's see him do some staff work. Let's see how that plays out. You know, I don't have a whole lot of hopes for it, but, you know, it is what it is, and I'll just stare and observe it like anything else. But just the idea when you said he has range, I couldn't help but laugh at that. But I'm not going to say he can't play it. It's just I don't see him, you know.
That's
but
fair.
I'll be fair and say, you know, I'll give him a chance, you know, because, I mean, really, that's all you can do at this point. You know, he got picked, mm-hmm. you know, just yeah, like yeah. not Terry Crews, you know,
well,
kept black tofu eater, you know, over there. Yeah. I'll give him a shot. Fucking not Terry Crews.
Okay.
Now, what about Daredevil? What do you think about Daredevil? Doesn't care. Okay, moving right along. John, you...
No. It's not that I don't care. I really want to see how they do that. I want to see how much of Miller's vision of the character comes through on screen. You know, I'm really interested to see that. But, you know, Matt Murdock, unless they get, like, really gritty, and it's on, what, Netflix, right? I think it's
yeah,
Netflix?
Yeah, it will be on Netflix exclusively.
Okay.
Like so, Orange is the New Black.
Right, so because they have Orange is the New Black, I'm thinking they could go a little further, you know? I really don't know how far they're willing to go, though, so, you know.
We'll see. It's
Actually, you know who I look forward more to in regards to Daredevil? It's not Daredevil, but it's the other characters surrounding him, you know?
Oh, the Foggy
like
Nelsons?
Villains and everybody else like that.
Stiltman. You want Stiltman. Let's be real
no,
here.
No. As I do want Stiltman, but I want to see if we'll get, like, Typhoid Mary. Well, we're
maybe
supposed
not
to have
Typhoid Mary. A altered version of Typhoid Mary. Like, should be
see,
human.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, I want Typhoid Mary.
What
you know,
about,
Bullet or Bushwhacker?
I know they're not going to do I know they said they're not doing Bullseye in the first season, which is, I think that's smart.
You don't want to blow your load in the first round.
Yeah.
Are they doing Kingpin?
Yeah, Kingpin's in it.
Kingpin's like the up and coming crime boss type thing in this one.
Okay, all right.
I want to see the Owl.
Okay.
The Owl.
I agree.
Cool. Like, all right. Like a rival, because like he's a freak, but he's also like it'd be cool to see like they're kind of fighting amongst each other, and you know, Daredevil's caught in the middle. There's a whole bunch of like Mr. Fear, the Gladiator. Gladiator would be cool to see. Especially considering what he actually...
I'd love to see the Punisher.
No, they're not doing the Punisher.
No, I mean, I'm just saying...
What about the Hand, though? They could have the Hand.
I think they should save the Hand for Elektra whenever Elektra shows up. Like
they could show... Well, they could do like they did with Mandarin, show hints of them.
No, yeah, of course, but I don't want them to show up.
I wouldn't have a problem with that, but yeah. At least give us something in regards to that, you know?
Ninja. Or Stick. Is Stick going to be in the show? Do we know anything about Stick?
Stick is in the show. He's being played by Scott Glenn.
Okay.
And ooh, we all know he has teeth. That's not bad. Scott Lang is Stick? If they do Stone also?
Scott Glenn, not Scott Lang. Not Ant-Man. Ant-Man is not coming to life and then playing another character. That would be too bad.
No.
Scott Lang was the guy from Avatar, right?
Oh, I don't know.
He was the sergeant.
I have Ant-Man on my
That's James Lang. That's James Lang.
Okay, well, that's what I was thinking of, because him playing Stick, I could definitely see that. But Scott Lang, you know what? Scott Lang was in a ninja movie back in the 80s.
Okay.
He was in the first, as a matter of fact, it was the first Enter the Ninja, so.
All right. Look,
oh, yeah. Dear God, yeah.
You know who they did end up getting, though, Taser? And I think you'll know it, too, once I say it. You've seen Sucker Punch, Zack Snyder's flick?
Sucker Punch? I liked it, too.
Yeah, yeah. The old dude from that one, the old wise man, the old white dude.
That was Scott Glenn, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's Scott Glenn.
Yeah. Yeah, he, not bad. Okay, so, yeah, not bad. All right.
Yeah. All right.
John, did you say anything about this?
No, not really. It's like a wait and see, and with Channing Tatum being, you know, Gambit. Channing Tatum, you know, I'll be like, I rooted for him. I rooted for him dying in the second G.I. Joe movie, and I'm not looking
forward. Oh, you were that guy? You're an asshole. Yeah.
Oh, well, hey, I'm a big one at that, too. Because, you know, at least now we'll get to see Magic Mike, too, when, you know, he's holding his big staff and all that jazz. And only he can charge it up. Too? Yes, they are.
Heard, yeah, that they were.
Okay, I know they're doing a 23rd Jump Street because that.
Oh, dear God.
I love that.
Yeah, I saw the second one. Not the first one, just the second. Oh, and, you know, Pete, you still owe me 2 hours. Because I saw H.J.'s friend Pete, and oh, my God, that movie was boring. It had some jokes, but it was like.
All right, well. So I'll wait and see on Daredevil and Gambit.
Yeah. Daredevil, I'm looking forward to.
As Remy LeBeau. LeBeau.
LeBeau.
LeBeau. LeBeau. I wonder if they're going to get Anna Paquin to be in it and be Rogue.
I don't think so.
That would be kind of cool. I mean, if it's not, I mean, everybody, at least my age, and even in comics, they still try to do it. They put Gambit and Rogue at the hip.
Yeah, they do.
It's like, you know, that was that flirtation, you know? All right.
Yep.
So let's move on to what everybody wants to really talk about. Fuck Age of Ultron. Who gives a shit about that guy? You know who's going to be the real star of 2015? The breakout hit of the year?
Black Captain America.
No. Ant-Man. Yes. Brian, we got a trailer, didn't we? We finally got a trailer.
We got a teaser.
Well,
we got a
here's
teaser,
the thing.
Technically.
We got the trailer of Ant-Man starring Michael Douglas featuring Paul Rudd as... Scott Lang. let's face it, it was Michael Douglas' show. Well, from the second that trailer dropped, it was all Michael Douglas.
Yeah, as Hank Pym.
Yes.
So I thought it was a very Marvel done trailer. You know, a lot of it wasn't, you know, I did kind of laugh out loud. It's still weird to see Paul Rudd in a movie like this. Like, considering who he is, I love Paul Rudd, too. Paul Rudd's one of my favorite actors.
He's the funny man! He's the funny man!
No, he's a very funny guy. He does rom-coms, he does comedies. To see him, you know, and, like, his sort of expression, huh, like, kind of sums up everything needs said about Ant-Man. Huh. Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Okay. We're doing this.
I will say the probably the most honest part of that trailer was when Michael Douglas says, "You need to be the Ant-Man." And he's just like, "Yeah, can we change the name?"
Yeah, exactly. It's like the I think that while the trailer really doesn't give, I did like the suit. I like the suit. It's not colorful, but that's fine. I did like the ant helmet. I liked how visually, and I'm sure it's going to look even better once the movie actually comes out, of him shrinking down and how the camera kind of shifts a little bit to make it dynamic, and seeing all those ants fly around. I thought it was really cool. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how they make a superhero movie about Ant-Man make it compelling. But, you know, Paul Rudd, people love Paul Rudd. You know, I already know that for, like, that's a fact. Like, people will go see this movie because it's Paul Rudd's in it. And people will go see this movie because it's a Marvel movie. So I think Michael Douglas' acting power with Paul Rudd's charm as the lovable loser that is Scott Lang. And we got a hint of Cassie. Cassie Lang, if that's her name.
Oh, that makes me so happy, so though. Maybe. It's like, and Judy Greer as Scott Lang's ex-wife just makes me all kinds of giddy. I fucking love Judy Greer.
And was he getting judo training in one of those scenes?
I think he was, or he was getting his ass kicked a la Rush Hour style by, like, some hidden master.
So it's going to – I think it's going to be – I think this is definitely going to be more comedy-oriented than the other movies. But I still think it's going to have that.
Hey, the last more comedy-oriented movie they dropped out of Marvel was Guardians.
You know, I get it. Yeah. Hopefully not as goofy. But I think
it looks like it has some semblance of seriousness to it as well.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping to tease of Yellow Jacket because I know Yellow Jacket is supposed to be the villain of this movie, which is again really odd, but whatever. I'm excited. I'm really ready. This is going to be fuck the year of the goat. It's the year of the ant. Man, should I leave? Should I just pack my bags and go? I'm just gonna go.
Yeah, get the fuck out. Get the fuck out!
All right, well, John, what did you think of the Ant-Man trailer?
It was okay. I'm still going to be ambivalent towards it. My concerns for it are still there, but it's not as bad. And we got to give Marvel Cinematic a little bit of credit. They've been able to take something and make it go and turn it into a really good movie, you know, like Guardians of the Galaxy was, despite some other people objecting to it.
Like one crotchety old man, I don't know what the fuck has up his ass. But...
Yeah, but I'm not a big fan of Paul Rudd, so that doesn't help. But Michael Douglas being in it and will help. And I do like Ant-Man as a character, so we'll just have to see how it goes. It's one of those where I'll be like, this will probably be a by-myself see it movie, and then be like, I'll either be going, I'm glad I was wrong about it, or I'm going to be like, you bastards, you made me see this. And we'll just have to see. So I'm kind of meh. So we'll just leave it at that.
Well, could be worse. I mean, imagine if Gambit comes out and we all have to go review it.
Well, we're all reviewing Fantastic Four, so you get
That's under protest.
No,
right,
it's good.
I want to do to the filmmakers to that movie what the lady who played the Invisible Woman played in House of Cards happens to her in the House of Cards.
Oh, my God. That's fucking...
You know, I'm saying that now. Unless they pull a miracle out of, you know, three or four different asses at the same time.
All right, either way.
Anyway.
Taser, what did you think of the Ant-Man trailer?
Well, I'll say this. It was something that Johnny V apparently loved because he, you know, on Facebook,
he's got a hard on for Michael Douglas. So.
Well, to be fair, I do too. Michael Douglas is a great fucking actor.
Yeah, he has his moments. You know? He's all right.
And I've seen quite a few Michael Douglas movies. But I will say that I from what I saw, I liked how they had him set up, you know, with him playing Hank Pym, and being like the kind of the old inventor, you know, the wisher, and I'm not exactly sure. Paul Rudd didn't really come across as anything because it was all about Michael Douglas in that, you know, and it was more or less him going, yeah.
I think, like I said,
can we change the name?
There
wasn't a whole lot with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was all Michael Douglas, and I think that kind of hurts it because when I get that, you know, he's Hank Pym, and I get that he's the one who creates it and everything, but the character that we're supposed to really care about
is
Paul Rudd. So it didn't sell him, and I think the teaser fails in that regard. Also, I gotta be honest, him going solo, I don't know. Ant-Man, and I don't even know what the big hubbub is, because, you know, all origin movies have to have some big hubbub. So I can only imagine what this movie's going to be about, beyond him being Ant-Man. I really don't.
It'll be about him winning his daughter's respect and love.
Well, it's going to be if this is cliche.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a coming of heroes story. It's going to be the thief That is Scott Lang, because they hinted that at the beginning of the trailer. You know, this thief who is out of his luck, who has a shit family life, his divorce.
Yeah, so it's Scott Lang from the comics.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That,
it's going to be a redemption story of him. This guy, this lovable loser, becomes a hero, an unlikely hero.
Yeah, but what he's going to have to take and go up against some major criminal threat or villain. You know, it could be either a villain or a criminal.
It's Yellow Jacket.
So what are we? It's what?
It's Yellow Jacket.
Yeah, Yellow Jacket looks like he's a henchman, not the big bad.
Well, we haven't seen Yellow Jacket for the movie, so we don't know what it is.
We've seen what the thing looks like. You haven't seen that?
No.
We've seen what the suit looks like. He doesn't look like the big bad. He looks like a henchman.
I don't agree with that.
I don't think
Ant-Man needs to fight somebody huge to be a hero.
You don't think he needs to fight somebody huge?
Well, I mean, by definition, he's going
to
fight somebody.
His wife.
By definition,
his fight needs to be huge. Not necessarily the villain. I'll grant you that. But the fight needs to be huge, which means it has to be a big problem.
I think it has to be huge from his perspective, which it will be because he's short.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. It's got to be. I guess I need to see what that detail is. You know exactly what Ant-Man's going
to
be going
up to play to what
the fact that, you know, he's
it has
trying
to play to what Ant-Man is.
What his eyes? Fuck that! I don't care about that. I want to see him take down like AIM or some shit. You know,
you're not. Rock. You're not. You're going to be disappointed. You're setting yourself up for expectations. You're going to be disappointed.
Not the first time. Guardians of the Galaxy. Duh. Okay. So. I'm not going into it. I'm just saying I've hoped for stuff and been disappointed. Hell, Thor 1. Thor 1 was a disappointment.
Fuck you. That movie was great.
That was a movie. It was a disappointment. It was, I don't have my hammer. My hammer.
Taser, let's go to the parking lot after this, okay?
Where's my hammer? Look at watch as I wrestle.
I disagree with the notion that Ant-Man needs to fight somebody big for it to be a good successful movie.
I think he doesn't need to fight like fucking Evil Hulk.
No, but when did I say Evil Hulk, though? Nobody said Evil Hulk.
What I'm saying is the fight that he gets involved in should be big. Because
I think it should play to whatever Ant-Man does, and that's being really fucking tiny. Play with it. Just play with it being Ant-Man. Make it different. It doesn't have to. It does not have to be. This is not. You're going to get your big superhero fix with Age of Ultron 2 months prior. So you get that.
That's true.
So Ant-Man is not going to be that. You're not. I don't expect. I think they're going to be. I think, given that the villain is Yellow Jacket, more than likely he's going to be able to shrink and grow. That's just going off speculation. That's just not based off anything. That what we potentially could see with Ant-Man is the most interesting and fun and different fight, and not necessarily the normal superhero epic scale. You know, we're not getting Man of Steel here, people. And I think a lot
I'm
of
not
are
looking
happy about
for
that.
Man of Steel. I'm not looking for Man of Steel, but you have to. It has to be. You have to have a hero who gets involved in a big fight, especially if this is the hero's first fight.
Well,
you
Iron
know,
Man.
It's
got to
be something
big.
Fight. Who?
Iron Man. I mean, he fought his.
He fought the Iron Monger. He fought a guy that was trying to kill him, take over his company, and usurp his technology for his own. That's a big fucking fight. That's a huge fight.
I don't get your expectations. I really don't get it.
That's because you're from Texas. But anyway, I'm just saying the trailer fails because we're given a whole lot. We're made to really care about Michael Douglas, and that's not the focus I think that it really should be. It's supposed to be about, you know, Paul Rudd and Scott Lang. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, I don't know anything else. So there's nothing in that trailer to make me go, yeah, I want to see this. I'm not saying I don't want to see it, but it didn't instill in me, you know, a whole lot of enthusiasm to see this movie. You know, that's what I'm saying. All right. And on that point, I haven't heard anything else to, you know, make me get geared up or riled up. But I'm right now, I'm still on the fence, you know. So I can say.
Anybody else want to take it?
Well, I think we got it covered.
Brian, anything else?
I already said my piece.
All right, there you go. So, Ant-Man, let us know what you think of Ant-Man number one, the summer's biggest superhero. God, you guys are going to get tired of me saying that shit for the rest
already
of the
am,
year.
But that's okay.
Okay, put it in perspective. I'd rather deal with the positivity that is Ant-Man than the negativity that is Fantastic Four, or FF, as I'm calling it. So let's deal with that. Ant-Man, it's going to be better than Fantastic Four, but that's not saying much.
I know, that's not really a high bar you're looking at hurdle there.
No, true.
Yeah, but that also means that they could only be better than Fantastic Four by a factor of one.
True, but we only have to wait a month in between those movies.
Fair enough.
Actually, not even a month, like 2 weeks. We're going to be busy. All right, so let's go on to individual reviews. Sticking with the Ant-Man theme, I am reviewing, fittingly enough, Ant-Man number one. I was not going to pick this up initially. But no, I wasn't. I was like, it's another Marvel book. I don't really need it. Image is calling my name. But I said, fuck it, you know what, let's pick it up. And what I got was this issue, if you've never read, and this is Scott Lang featuring Ant-Man, obviously, because this is going to be the main hero of the upcoming movie, as we just talked about. Scott Lang, this sort of sets up his new paradigm. It also gives you his... The way they set up Scott, and I said it in the trailer, is like Scott Lang is the lovable loser. They kind of set up that, you know, they gloss over the fact that Cassie was brought back to life, I believe.
Oh my God, do they gloss over
I can see why. If you want people to come in and, you know, not deal with that shit,
there's
fine.
Not a single mention of her as stature anywhere.
Okay. That doesn't mean – okay, one, you're acting like if it's a race, but it's not. It's just they didn't mention it. You know who she is. That's all you need to know. People who didn't read it or have never read anything with it will find out eventually. I'm sure they're not going to duck it forever. So if that was your piece, that's fine. I agree with you. It was a little odd that they didn't mention stature. But in terms of establishing Scott Lang's status quo, I thought it was really, really well done. The art was okay. It wasn't anything great. I thought it was very funny in Scott's inner dialogue. It reminded me of Hawkeye, but better, because Clint was just a loser. Clint in that book was just a dumbass, and I'm like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? You're just an idiot. whereas Ant-Man, fitting enough, comes off as, yeah, you're a loser, but you take it in stride and you try to do better. He's like Peter Parker. At least he comes off like Peter Parker, but he doesn't like wallow in it. You know, because obviously he's a grown-ass man.
Really? Because, you know, I never once considered Scott Lang a loser. Seriously?
No, I'm saying in this book they're chopping
him. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, neither have I. I've only read him in Avengers. So I've never really I never read him in solo books. In Avengers, he was like, people didn't trust him. Like, in the books, like, he was never really, like, in the books that I've read, he was never really the standout. He was always, like, he was a fine enough character. But here they paint him as, you know, like, he has no money. His ex-wife hates him.
No, I get that.
You know, like, he's a loser, but he's a lovable loser, and he's trying to do better. So I like that aspect of it. And I thought it was really, like, really funny. And apparently he can shrink his organs down and to make himself sick, which I thought was kind of gross and funny at the same time.
That's new.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I was like,
hold on. Is he still using capsules for the pin particles?
No. They didn't mention capsules, but he's using pin particles. They didn't mention capsules though. So, but the story is that, like I said, he's trying to get a new job working for Tony Stark as a lead security, which is really interesting. And so Tony is like the biggest dick in this. He's like, I don't believe it. You know what? Fuck it. I'm going to let you do it. I don't believe you're going to win, but I'll let you do it anyways. And he constantly mocks Ant-Man until finally Ant-Man like tries to sneak into his house, into Avengers Tower. And basically rewrite this test that was supposedly unbeatable until the new Beetle who's currently making out with Tony catches in. And, you know, he's like, you were going to win always. You know, I knew you were going to do it. And, like, I believed in you, buddy. And it seems like, okay, this is the paradigm we're going to be set up with. Ant-Man's going to be working for Stark. It's fine. It's going to be cool. And Ant-Man or Scott gets the news that, oh, they're moving to Miami, and it's like the family drama of like, shouldn't you have told me this? You know, the divorce family thing, you know, everybody, people know about that. And so Scott ultimately says, fuck the new job. And he goes to a toy store and he buys a Tony Stark apartment, like, doll set. No, it's like in a package. It's not a doll set, but like a Tony Stark apartment replica. And he basically uses that as an apartment as Cassie and her mother move to Miami and Scott's along with them. And they watch Battle Royale because apparently Cassie's a hipster and she's like, we don't like Hunger Games. She even says Hunger Games is a horrible ripoff of Battle Royale, which I was like, that's funny.
It's also funny since, you know, they did that book with the Avengers Academy brats and killed them off too.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So it ends with her and like watching it on an iPhone, but it looks like a big screen TV because they're shrunk down. And Scott is now in Miami. So what I'll say this, if you've never read Ant-Man or if you're curious about the movie, I have no idea what the movie's going to be like, but if you're curious, this actually gives you one complete story. You get a sense of what Scott is going to be like for this series, at least he should be. And it sets up an interesting thing. And the art was good, and you know, it's not action-oriented, so if you were expecting that, it's not. It's a lot more about Scott's life. Not turmoil, because turmoil's the wrong word. There's turmoil, but it's more about his life. And he kind of rolls with the punches. He's kind of like that guy's like, hey, I'll deal with it. I got this.
You mean domestic exploits?
A little bit, yeah. All right. So I'm looking forward, and it's going to be in Miami, you know, a city, another super, finally, another, you know, it's nice to have a superhero book not set in New York City. So there you go. I give Ant-Man a solid 4 out of 5. It was very good. I will be sticking with it. I wasn't sure about it, but I was like, you know what? I want to see the adventures of Scott Lang. I liked him when he was on the Avengers. I was glad when they brought him back. So it's cool that this is going to be the year of the Ant. Man. Okay, let's move on to Brian. Take it away, buddy.
Okay, so I picked up Spider-Man 2099, number 7, tie-in to Spider-Verse. So in the last issue, their 3-man team was cut down to 2 after being chased by a member of the Inheritors named Deimos, who is the largest, most overall threatening, I suppose, member of the Inheritors, you know, physically imposing, I suppose. And Spider-Man 2099 worked out a deal with Tyler Stone over at Alchemex to help them out. How do they help them out? Well, they figured out in the last issue that when you kill an Inheritor, they immediately return with their consciousness implanted into a cloned body. So you can't really kill them for any extended period of time. So what they figured out to do was they trapped Deimos in a stasis field after they already killed him, and now they're going to dissect the dead body and try and figure out any weaknesses these Inheritors might have. Now, there's a brief interlude where Miguel goes to acquire a cure, an unnamed cure, but we can figure out it's for the terminally ill landlord of his back in the – well, not back in his time, but in the present day, I should say. So he picks up a cure for his, you know, would-be love interest, and then he gets a call from Lady Spider, the steampunk-esque spider woman, and they go to figure out that Deimos is actively trying to kill himself in order to be brought back and hunt them down, and he actually is successful. Now this is bad because they don't have another way to stop him. He burnt up all the energy in the stasis field that was containing him. And so now he's coming back with with his consciousness in a new body, and he's going to kill Miguel and Lady Spider. So actually, Miguel arranges for a distraction to take hold of Mr. Deimos. And that distraction is, funny enough, Punisher 2099, a.k.a. Jake Gallows, I believe was his name. Yeah, he shows up, hits him with every weapon under the sun, machine gun, smacks him around with a titanium baseball bat, gets him with a plasma gas cannon, and of course it doesn't really do any permanent damage, but what it does is it sends him sends him flying down, because you know, future build up. So he fell through a building and now he's down on the ground floor again. So it didn't defeat them, but it bought them enough time to escape to the rendezvous point. Now, the rendezvous point is the scene of the opening scene of Amazing Spider-Man number 12, which John will get into in a brief moment, what happens there, which is you'll understand why it's a bad thing they arrive there. They actually get there after everything's said and done. But that having been said, it's a more of a low-key issue. Not a whole lot happens. It's still decent writing, and it plays on Spider-Man 2099 and Tyler Stone's rivalry going on. It's also got some slightly more character development for Lady Spider, and the inclusion of Punisher 2099 is funny and, you know, nice to see, I suppose. So, you know, it's really just kind of middle of the road. Nothing really exciting happens. But at the same time, it was enjoyable enough that, you know, it didn't offend you. So I'll give it a 3 out of 5. Really middle of the road for me. But, yeah, that whole bit where they show up on that Earth where that shit goes down, John's going to tell you what the fuck happened there. John.
And no better what, let's go to John with the latest chapter of Spider-Verse. Is Ben Reilly dead? Just tell me, is he dead?
No, I think he's still alive.
Fuck! I'm done.
But yeah, to continue from...
Everything is awesome.
To continue from that review into Amazing Spider-Man 12, we find out that the father of the inheritors comes into the, where they call it the safe zone, where it was the one universe where Spider-Man was Captain Universe. Well, he defeated him and absorbed up all his, not only his life essence, but also the Captain Universe power. So he's like an unstoppable force at the moment, and everybody's freaking out. And then everybody's starting to portal in and going, holy shit, what's going on? And then Peter comes back going, well, don't worry, we got a special tree here, you know, a person here, and this, you know, then there's this Spider-Man that comes in, and he's all, you know, and he's like, who are you? And he's like, I am the emissary from hell. I am Spider-Man, and he summons Leopardon, and this big, giant robot comes out of the portal, and everybody's going, are you fucking kidding me? And even the inheritor is just like, what?
What the fuck is this?
And he then proceeds to go, okay, well, if you're going to play with toys, I might as well go ahead and take care of the toy and then punish the boy inside, and rips the arm off the giant robot.
And, not Leopardon, no!
Yeah, that's what I was like, really? This thing is like a pretty unstoppable force, and you're letting this guy just rip off the arm. But, you know, that's a whole other thing. The Tokusatsu fan in me was just like, no. You could have at least gotten a couple of more blows in. But you find out that the Captain Universe Spidey died. Everybody gets to another safe zone that the inheritors can't seem to go through, because you find out that Earth is a post-apocalyptic Earth where the radiation is out the wazoo, so it even affects the inheritors. And you see everything else going on. You see where Peter contacts Miguel, talks to him, and tying into Spider-Man 2099 about the dissection and stuff. Then the other cool moment was he talks to Miles Morales, who is currently in another dimension, in the Spider-Mobile with some, you know, with another Spider-Man, and they're trying to stop them, and Miles goes, okay, this is officially the moment where my career as Spider-Man has jumped the shark. And I laughed so hard on that.
That's a great moment, because it's got the fucking, the one that's the Spider-Man from all these freaking memes and shit, like all the obscenely funny posters, and it's got like the Lone Ranger Spider-Man. It's fucking hilarious. And then the Web Warriors bit, which is just hilarious. Yeah.
And then they finally get everybody together. They fight off another inheritor who has her hounds, which are all the various versions of, you know, Kraven, Rhino, and all them working for them as hounds. And then they finally all get to that particular Earth where it's like a emergency safe zone. They find a bunker, and Silk is there. She had been there, came there first, and gets everybody in there. And he's like, Peter, you might be in for a shock. And you find out that's sole survivor, the Spidey survivor there is Uncle Ben of that Earth. And he's like, Uncle Ben? And then the guy, and Uncle Ben goes, Peter. And it ends. And so you're like, oh, goody. So Peter's going to see an alternate reality of where Uncle Ben didn't die. And it just, I was just like, okay. But I will say this, Spider-Verse has been a wild ride from beginning to now compared to the Axis stuff and everything else. This has been an actual fun storyline to read. I mean, I know there have been a lot of people going, man, Dan Slott's gone over the, you know, gone completely nuts, and he sucks. He's killed the title for me because of this, you know, this story. And I'm like, really? Spider Island didn't do that for you? And I'm saying this is like his apology for Spider Island, and this is like his love letter for everything that is Spider-Man. All different realities, they brought in every known version you can think of, and then some. I mean, come on. One of my favorite scenes has been when one of the Inheritors went to the Earth where it's Spider-Man and his amazing friends, and they all get killed.
Yeah. They amazingly die.
Yeah, they got gacked, including Miss Lion, from what I saw.
Yes!
And
wait a minute, who killed them?
It was the Inheritor. He nice. They got into... They got in his way, and like he said, as long as you didn't get in his way, he was only going after the spider. He didn't care about anybody. They don't care about anybody else, but you run and get in their way, they gack you.
How did Miss Lion die?
I'm not sure. It was off screen, but you could see
her
way.
You're taking a seeing amount of glee in this, Taser. So more than I
hate that fucking dog. I swear.
That
fucking dog.
One of my other favorite scenes was it was in a Tales of Spider-Verse deal where they did like a bunch of short stories. They show the Hostess Spider-Man getting killed, and it's a one page, and it looks like a one page ad from the 70s, you know, the Hostess deal, and he's trying to do the Twinkie thing, and then the guy just devours him and just like, ooh, delicious. And I was just like, this is the kind of storyline that if you're gonna go, you're gonna go full tilt, go full tilt, and they have been doing it. They promised you every Spider-Man known to man, and they're delivering plus some. I give this issue at least a 3.5 out of 5 because you know the art was wonderful. The inclusion of the Japanese Spider-Man with the robot was it just set my heart you know alight. I was just like, oh yeah, and it was wonderful. And I will go ahead and mute the mic for a minute and go ahead and let the next review go.
Taser,
yo,
go ahead.
What am I doing?
You're reviewing Angela.
Oh. I'm reviewing. Oh,
yes, man. You are.
Yes, you are, Taser-san.
Taser-san. So, the snare. Okay.
Make your ancestors proud.
As whole, yes.
Yes, you are.
Yes, indeed. Ha-ha. Anyway, Angela Asgard's Assassin, number one. And let me get the important West information out of the way first.
Wait, do you mean number one or number two?
Number one.
I already reviewed number one.
You did?
Yes. I thought you were reviewing number two.
No.
I reviewed number one.
Oh,
dear. Oh. Well, there goes the old-timer black. You know,
what we have here is a lack of communication.
I did say number one, too. I hadn't read it.
Well,
what we have here is a failure to communicate.
I have finally read it since.
Go ahead and tell your thoughts. That's fine.
I thought it was interesting. I will pick up and find the second issue to this, if only to see what happens, because basically it ends with her facing off against freaking Thor, Sif, and the Warriors 3. Oh, Warriors 3 in effect.
The Horde of Asgard against Angela.
Yes, the Horde. The Odin's son, you know. When did Thor get that bionic arm?
He didn't get it yet. Actually, I think he just showed up with it in Thor, the female Thor's book. But I don't think they actually showed him.
You just ruined it for OGG over there because he hasn't read number three yet.
That's okay. I'm not worried about it.
Well, did Thor was in Thor? Oh no! Oh, how could I possibly have him?
No, like he's in Thor, and he's been in Avengers, you know, with the whole time skip and the multiversal, whatever the fuck. And he has it there, and he has it here. So it's like, well, where did he get it from? You know, that's been my question.
Maybe it was the destroyer armor.
So how do you... Never mind.
He's like, hey, dude, I need your arm.
Okay.
Yeah. I need that guy's arm.
I really need that guy's arm.
Well, either way, I do want to see what happens because of that. I think
it's a little more fun in the next issue.
Okay. I will say that this kind of, if you didn't read, what was it? I think it was a single that had her and like her backstory and everything else. If you didn't read that, you might be a little lost here because the backstory we get isn't for her. It's for her fellow angel Sarah. And she was from heaven, which apparently
H-E-V-E-N.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think
heaven is Image
H-E-A-V-E-N. And on top of which, I'm also wondering why she was doing bounty hunter work in the known in the non. Well, outside of the nine worlds.
What happened? Jesus, I don't even know.
Well, she was doing stuff that was like kind of...
The second issue explains what she's doing right now. The second issue goes more into
that. That helps. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't get the idea that, you know, she's kind of like, you know, as guardian or even... had been an angel. This seems
It explains it. She was born as guardian. She's the daughter of Fagra. What's her name?
Freya.
She is the daughter of Freya and Odin. She is their daughter. She was kidnapped by the angels. Odin and Freya thought she was murdered. She's not murdered anymore. Or she was not. Now, and then it turns out that was wrong. So that's her origin.
Mary Jane Parker and her twin sister, with the twin sister having been stolen, and people think she's dead.
I just like the implication that heaven was Image Comics and that she has to be turned back to the real world.
Yeah, but so she is Asgardian. She fucking hates Odin and Thor. She hates everybody because she was raised as an angel, and angels hate, at least in this new made-up thing. All of this is made up. But
does it make her upset enough that she starts weeping?
Oh, you jerk.
No, I don't.
But I will say this, though.
Was that a fucking Doctor Who reference?
Yes, it was.
Get the fuck out of here.
Here I was trying to avoid a Spawn joke, you know. Come on.
I could take a Spawn joke.
I'm sorry. I don't even watch Doctor Who. I didn't deserve to make that reference.
Taser, what were you saying?
I didn't recognize that this was him and his art. I really didn't.
It's a little bit. It's a lot more
sketchy.
No, not sketchy. You don't know what sketchy is if you call his
it's
art.
It's not even the ink or that
no,
makes
it's not,
it.
I don't know what sketchy is. Art. I literally did not pick up the book, so I have no idea what it looks like inside.
This is a big departure from what I'm used to from Jimenez. This is a big departure.
He's not doing George Perez anymore. He's doing a lot more.
Right. Good point. No, you're 100%.
Which is fine. I love when he did that.
I thought it was definitely original and striking, you know? It's uh-huh. just I was kind of looking for – I know what I expect from Jimenez, and this was not it. And I won't say I'm happy. It's just, well, okay. You know, it looks more like he's doing something on his own, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'll thumbs up that. And it wasn't bad art at all. So I really the only I had was – you know, the flashback that we get in this isn't for her, it's for the other woman, you know, which, okay, fine, you know. But it does get enticing at the end, you know, with the whole, oh shit, Thor.
Yeah.
And a pissed off Thor.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something right there.
And of course, the reveal that she stole the new heir of Asgard.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about.
They explain a little bit more in the second issue.
Is anybody reading Thor? Is that actually a thing?
In Thor, right now the focus is on Lady Thor.
Before female Thor showed up.
No, there's no talk about it at all.
Okay, so then this is some new shit. Okay. I can't say I loved it. I will say it was interesting. And I'll definitely be reading the next couple just to kind of, you know, get a feel for it and see where it takes me.
Same.
For that, I'll
although the main character is literally no characterization at all. Like, she's kind of just there. And there, all the interesting stuff happens around her.
Well, she's more about the job.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I didn't have a problem
which is,
with.
Which is dangerous for me, because it's like...
You know, as a matter of fact, they could have gotten rid of the other woman and just, you know, had her kicking ass, and that'd have been fine. I'll give this a 4. No. Let me. I got to dive on it just a little bit. Let me give this a 3.8 Warriors out of 5. I think this might make for a good trade, you know?
Oh, I think if it's Jimenez all the way through, yeah. Well, I mean, it's not him all the way through. But
I just mean story-wise, I think this will make for a good trade.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. I'll be reading it monthly. You know, more female books is all that matters, and this seems to be a good
one. I don't care about male or female. I just want the books to be good.
Well, yeah. I want good female books. So, all right. So here we go. Thank you for the reviews. So now, since this is episode 190, and we're counting down to episode number 200... So, which means, as we teased in the last episode before we went on break, that we are going to be counting down our personal top 10 favorite Marvel stories. So, to clarify, because apparently people are fucking confused, that for each week up until the episode 200, we will be each of us will be giving our one that number. So this week we'll get 10. Next week you'll get 9. The following week you'll get 8. So on and so forth. So for this week, John, what is your 10th favorite Marvel story of all time?
Okay, now this does include a crossover with another company at the time, but for me, the number 10 of my all time favorite Marvel is the first time Spider-Man and Superman crossed over in the giant special in the 70s. It was kind of like, you know, imagine, you know, an 8-year-old boy back in the 70s, and, you know, you're thinking, you know, anything could happen, you know, but you knew that DC was on one side and Marvel was on the other, and you were just like, okay, yada, yada. Now, imagine my shock when I look on the newsstand, you see the all-giant special, and I know Tasers know what I'm talking about. The huge friggin', you know, comic thing.
No pop bag like, this thing.
Yep. And I was like, whoa, they get to meet. And I won't get into the plot or anything. I just say look for it in your stores. Look
who
on for it online.
Art? Who was the artist behind it?
Actually, I think it was Ross Andrew and Jerry Conway, I think.
Oh, okay.
If I remember right. This was like late 70s. So
and this is not the one with Wonder Woman and Hulk, right?
That was the second one. No, this is the first one with Lex Luthor and Dr. Octopus.
Really?
Okay. Yes. And it was very well done for what it was. The crossover was good. You got Superman being pre-crisis powerful, but they kept it to a minimum. And they had a nice little showdown between him and Spider-Man that was hilarious.
The first time.
Yeah. And that was, I laughed my ass off. Well, let's say it involves Lex Luthor and a red solar radiation gun. And when it wears off, Spidey gets, you know, the shock of his life at how hard Superman is.
God damn it.
How hard?
That sounded wrong.
I know, sorry. I wasn't trying to be like that, but I'm just saying. Think about how you're punching a guy around, and then all of a sudden he gets rock hard, and you break your hand on his chest when you're trying to punch him.
But they fight, right? They fight now. They fight.
Yeah, they kind of do. Spider-Man's guy gets pissed off, gets kind of angry at him, and Superman's trying his best not to do, you know. Yeah, and what was funny is finally Superman finally starts losing his temper. He's like, okay, I was trying to do my best here, but you really want to take something? He starts getting ready to throw a punch. He's like, wait a minute, what am I doing? I would blast him into atoms if I hit him with even remotely in my deal. Pulls his punch, like,
at the
you
last
know, literally at the last second, and of course, this is pre-crisis Superman. Even a whiff of the air around his fist from stopping knocks Spider-Man almost completely through a building.
Damn.
Yeah. That's
Taser, find me that image. I want to see that.
Yeah, it is hilarious. But yeah, it really influenced me at the time because I read both Superman and Spider-Man off the news racks, you know, because I was a kid and loved both of them, but just seeing the two of them together was awesome. And you couldn't get any cooler than that at the time. And it's still to this day, even with all the countless crossovers they've had since then, like in the 90s when they had Marvel DC do various crossovers, And, of course, we can't do that now because, you know, Warner's its own media conglomerate, and Disney owns Marvel, so you'll never see it crossover. It'll never happen again.
The last thing we got was, like, over 10 years ago now was JRA Avengers.
And that was a good one, too. I highly recommend anybody that listens out there, look for it. Yeah, it's Silver Age as hell. It's cheesy, and you'll be like, what the hell was he talking about? But if you look at it and look at it for when it came from, you can appreciate it for what it was. It really worked on a lot of levels. You see everybody meeting each other. Mary Jane meeting Lois Lane. Perry White and J. Jonah Jameson.
I don't need to see anymore.
Yeah. J. Jonah Jameson meeting Perry White was hilarious.
Oh, that sounds funny.
Yeah. And they just talk to each other like, you know, they're in a bar and they're like, oh, hey, how you doing? And I just was laughing my butt off. And seeing it just, even thinking about it, I'll have to look for it again because I have it at my house somewhere. It just brings a warmness to my heart that, you know, that they did that and that they can't do it again, you know, is really sad. But that was my number 10th moment. I mean, that was automatically one of the first things that popped up in my head when you brought up the idea for the list. So there you go. And if I was to give it a ranking, I'd give it a 4-star out of 5 because
it makes
not always
10
perfect.
On your list, though, huh?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Oh, there's other things as I got older, but that was one of the first things, and I ranked them in how they influenced how I became a fan of particular titles or whatever. But that was just pure gold for an 8-year-old to find, and you're just like, whoa! And there you go. And I'm sure Taser would agree.
All right, so I'm going to go next with a Elseworlds story in a way because I thought it kind of celebrates the Marvel Universe in its own real way. Marvel really doesn't do a lot of these. They do what ifs. I'm like, well, what if? Like, but they don't really do like – they don't really play – unless it's X-Men, they don't really play with alternate realities that much. You know, you don't really see that. They're doing it now, but in the time I read, there really isn't like Avengers alternate X. They don't explore that enough. And one of my favorite stories of all time, because it celebrates Marvel and everybody's in it and it's great art, was Bullet Points by J. Michael Straczynski. One bullet – well, it says one bullet changed the Marvel Universe. It really doesn't. But basically, the sort of crux of it is that one bullet, the importance of what a bullet does and what it can do and ripples in time. And so the universe changes. Erskine is killed before he can give Steve Rogers the Super Soldier Serum, who is being escorted by Ben Parker, so Ben Parker is never resurrected. Steve becomes Iron Man. Peter Parker becomes the Hulk, and he's like a jackass of a kid who never learned great power creates responsibility. There's different appearances, like Hank Pym becomes Spider-Man, and Doctor Strange, in fact, doesn't become Doctor Strange. He joins S.H.I.E.L.D. and he never gets – like, he never breaks his hands. It's a cool, like – well, like it's a cool what-if story in a way, all in one continuous story. And it all ends with the coming of Galactus. And I don't – and in this universe, there is no Fantastic Four. The rocket exploded leaving only Mr. Fantastic. So Ben Grimm's dead, Sue Storm's dead, Johnny Storm's dead, and not Nick Fury, Reed Richards becomes the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. So you have no Fantastic Four. The X-Men are relatively the same. Like, some people don't change, like Thor still, like they even acknowledge that, like in the fourth or fifth issue. But it all ends with the coming of Galactus, as big as that gets. That's a pretty huge moment. And like every hero and villain is there, either altered or unaltered, and it all ends with the Hulk, Peter Parker, coming out of hiding to basically stop the Hulk, and Hulk sacrifices his life to show Silver Surfer that humanity is worth saving. Galactus leaves, and it ends very somberly. But what I really liked about it, it celebrated what made Marvel Marvel. And it also was a cool sort of divergent look into the Marvel Universe. And like I said, outside of X-Men, you really don't get that much. You don't really get the exploring alternate realities and like, well, what is this? What if this was this? What if this was that? They exist, but they don't play with it a lot. So for me, that's – and plus it has some really great, interesting art by Tommy Lee Edwards. That bullet points is my 10th favorite story of all time. Brian.
Yeah.
What is your favorite – story, 10th favorite
story. Mine is one that I read recently, but it is not an especially recent story. I was in my LCS. It was one of those weeks where there just wasn't a lot out. So the guy who owns the place was chatting me up, trying to get me to buy something. He just got in a bunch of new comics and stuff. And, you know, he was showing me through someone's collection that they had sold. And so he hands me one that he thinks I might like. And when I saw it, I'm like, wait. When he mentions the name, I'm like, wait, I read that already. He put that out only a few couple years ago. He's like, no. This is a different one. This is like the first thing they ever tried. He handed it to me. It's not an especially fun little story like John and Ben chose, but I enjoyed it all the same. It's Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe, 1995, by Garth Ennis and Doug Braithwaite. And it does what it says it does. He kills every motherfucker in the Marvel Universe. It is... It's crazy. Have you guys ever read that story?
I actually own
an issue. It's hilarious. Basically, what happens is instead of Frank Castle's family being killed in a gangland slaying, they get killed in a fight between the Avengers, the X-Men, and a group of brood aliens. So his hatred is focused on the heroes. And
damn.
Yeah. So he killed. This is Castle, who just shows up on the scene, too. He's a police officer, so he's responding to this. And after he finds out what happened, he kills Cyclops, Hawkeye, and Shadowcat. He's attacked by Wolverine, and he only survives because Colossus pulls Wolverine off of him. So recovering in jail, Castle is brought into this fold. It's sort of like a man named Kesselring creates an organization of people that have been hurt or have had family killed by the heroes as a result of their carelessness and their actions. And so they fund him to go and kill everybody, every hero, every villain. He kills everybody.
He kills the Marvel Universe.
Pretty much. And the only person that shows him any compassion, in fact, the person that called Cyclops and Captain America on their carelessness at the beginning of the story was Matt Murdock, Daredevil. Because, you know, lawyer, man of the people. In fact, he actually defends Frank Castle every time he gets picked up, because he gets picked up a couple more times, and it gets more expensive to break him out every single time. But he ends up actually sort of being the last guy that Castle tracks down. Daredevil sort of stayed off the radar, but after killing everybody, his assignment is killing Daredevil now. After Castle finds out that the person who had been defending him this whole time and who actually agreed with him on a lot of stuff, Daredevil dies, and Castle kills himself at the end of the story.
Mission complete.
Well, I mean, that's the ultimate fate for Castle. He has to take a gun to his head.
He is the last man alive. Like, he's the last sort of, you know, all, you know.
So he would theoretically win the Marvel Universe Royal Rumble.
Well, yes, theoretically. But he's like the number three.
He didn't go after the Brood, too? I would think, you know.
Well, no, because it was the heroes' powers and actions that got them killed, not the Brood.
The Brood had invaded, which caused the heroes to kind of take action.
Pretty much, yeah. But it makes sense if you'd read it.
Frank Castle does not go after cephalopods.
I don't think they ever made like a Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe 2 Electric Boogaloo in space where he kills all the Brood. No,
and I
never
see that movie, even if Colonel wasn't in.
So he just goes into space and kills all the Brood. but it's like a poetic justice type deal, and it sort of sets up the tone for what Garth Ennis does with the rest of his career. Because in case you don't know, he's not a big fan of costume heroes. He actually really dislikes them.
Well, yeah.
If you've ever read his series The Boys, you can see that. And well, this sort of
yeah, this or is even, sort or of even his Punisher run, you know,
even that too, because this
didn't
is him.
Didn't
pretty much
also do Stormwatch?
No.
Vaughn Ellis.
That was Vaughn Ellis. They're both from that same region, though, so it's fine.
They're both British. That's all I know.
Yeah. So this is really him setting up the tone for what kind of writer he'll be for the rest of his career.
Hey, it worked. He wrote one of my favorite stories of all time in Preacher, so it worked.
I'm not saying it didn't work. I'm just saying that, you know, this is where we see the beginnings of that young, scrappy Garth Ennis who, you know, killed everybody. So maybe not. Also, big ups to Doug Braithwaite. This is a really beautifully illustrated issue, too, if I do say so myself.
And it's a one-shot, right? It's not like
it's a one-shot book, but it's like one of those double-sized issues or whatever. It's really a lot of fun to read.
Okay.
So if you get a chance, check it out. But it's an exciting – I don't want to say exciting. It's really more of a somber look at what happens if you piss off the wrong guy, I guess.
So it's like Michael Douglas in that one movie? I can't remember.
Pretty much, yeah. So, yeah, that hits number 10. Just because it is just full on. It is Punisher full on. It's probably my favorite Punisher story outright. So.
All right. And tease, that's not going to be the last time you're going to hear about Garth Ennis from one person.
Ooh. All right.
Well, how high will he go? We'll see. All right, Taser, close it out. What is your 10th favorite Marvel story of all time? Go.
Basically, it's a story that introduced to me the concept of plot-induced stupidity.
Ooh.
Spider-Man versus Fire Lord.
Whoa!
Spider-Man 269 to 270. AKA Fire Lord needs a slice of pizza. I don't know. For those of you who haven't read it and, you know, might have only heard about it, you know, through internettings or whatever, basically, Fire Lord no longer held a Galactus. You know, tired of flying through space going, I got a staff, la la la. You know, Xandar has been blown up. You know, I got nothing to do. Hey, I'll go by Earth. The Surfer goes by there all the time. Well, yeah, I think at the time he might have been stuck there. Yeah, I think at the time he was probably still stuck there. So let me go see what's going on there and maybe I could find. Oh, yes, pizza. I heard somebody mention it. To pizza away. So he flies to Earth, he flies to Manhattan, of course, and he finds a pizza place. And, you know, this was, I think, 1985? So we're talking, you know, mutant hysteria and everything else like that. And he walks into this pizza place, and he sits down and he orders a slice of pizza, which he's given. And then, you know, the guy kind of gets up to go and, you know, there were people who were kind of looking at him before thinking that he might have been an adventurer, but, you know, he's like, I don't have to pay this, that, the other thing. And, you know, people are getting upset with him. He's like, hey, I take umbrage at you thinking I should, you know, pay you whatever. And, you know, it doesn't go too well. So Spider-Man gets involved and, you know, because, you know, Spider-Man, I was swinging along and everything. And, well, you know, Fire Lord doesn't want to be bothered. And, you know, Spider-Man, when Peter Parker is Spider-Man, Peter Parker kind of gets extroverted. So, hey, flamey, this, that, the other thing. And also, let's also not forget that this was also Peter Parker who was wearing the symbiote at the time. So Parker's also being a bit more cocky. And, you know, he kind of baits Fire Lord, you know, doing what he normally does, and this is a little bit even more so. And Fire Lord takes offense, so, you know, he goes at it, and Fire Lord is Fire Lord. You know, I remember at one point, Peter Parker, you know, rather, Spider-Man was trying to get away from Fire Lord, and he hops on top of a train because there wasn't a whole lot of big buildings that he could web-swing on, and Fire Lord surrounded the train. This is a moving train. He surrounded the train with a ring of fire.
I fell into a burning ring of fire.
Again, we're talking New York City, a subway train. A subway train is around 10 cars or so. Mm-hmm. On an above, you know, this was an above ground train. And
does it go above and then go below? Is that how it works?
Later on, but this might have been like, I don't know, maybe the N line or so. Oh, okay. But either way, this was a car that was in motion. He surrounds it with a ring of fire. Now, the car never actually suffered any damage, so I'm just kind of left to assume. And this is what I was thinking as a kid. He didn't damage the train. So you mean to tell me the fire followed the train? Whoa! Okay, I was almost 14 at the time. And, you know, there's not a whole lot. I think Spider-Man manages to dodge Fire Lord by the end of the first one. But he ends up thinking, using his head a little bit, and he ends up changing the way the suit looks to look like regular clothing. But, you know, Fire Lord wouldn't let it drop, you know. So he starts committing chaos and dismay and destruction, and things go exploboom and everything. You know, basically Michael Bay's wet dream. You know, Transformers 12. And, you know, there's nobody that Spider-Man can call because, you know, he goes by the Baxter Building. The Baxter Building's not there because I think it was...
in space?
Dr. Doom. Yeah.
Did he set it in space or some shit like that?
Yes, it was. It was all thanks to Dr. Doom. And which kind of... That's one of the things that I actually miss about Marvel books. Marvel books would actually have like little tidbits of stuff that happened in other Marvel books and then have a blurb there. And, you know, they made reference to other works, but, you know, kind of kept it at, yeah, this was a big, you know, one big cohesive universe. They don't do that so much anymore. You know, I miss that. Sidebars and everything like that. You know, you don't see that anymore. But anyway... and he can't call the Avengers because the Avengers are elsewhere. So he's like, what the hell do I do with this guy? I mean, Spider-Man's kind of, you know, lost at the twitch. And Fire Lord catches him, and, you know, he starts putting Spider-Man through the ringer. And he's doing everything that he can to avoid, you know, going after this guy. And no matter what he does, Fire Lord, it's just not working. So... Spider-Man just kind of does the one thing that nobody would expect. And he attacks Fire Lord. And I think the two of you have seen the fight, yes?
Seen the what?
You've seen Spider-Man fight, that Spider-Man Fire Lord fight, right?
No, I don't believe so. No,
really? Okay, I'll find you a picture later on, but it basically...
Yeah.
Huh?
I said, yeah, do it.
Okay, yeah. Well, I know, Iggy, you've seen it, right?
Iggy?
Iggle Thor?
Igglestein.
No, I have not.
Seriously?
It's not collected in the Spider-Man Venom issues that I have.
Oh, my
It's
gosh.
Not collected in that. They didn't bother. And in the newer ones, it's in there, but it's not in the older ones.
Okay, then allow me to keep talking while I look this up, because this really is something that I want to hear your opinions on, because, I mean, when you look at it, it's kind of gorgeous. I mean, seriously, it is a gorgeous thing to look at, and I found it, so here we go. But in regards to, let's say, balance, you know, and somebody who reads comics and you just look at it and you go, the fuck out of here. And, you know, it's something that works. And there, I just posted it so you can look at it and tell me. If you know, skip all the way to, like, the last panel, you see basically the bottom three panels is Spider-Man wailing on him.
Yeah, he's mad.
And... the panel that follows, the page that follows that, rather, is the Avengers, Captain America, and I think it was Captain America, Hercules, maybe Star Fox and Wasp.
Star Fox.
And I think Black Knight, because I'm going by memory, because I don't have those books anymore. You know, I gave my collection away. They, you know, kind of encounter Spider-Man beating on an unconscious Fire Lord, you know, amidst all this destruction, and he's, you know, screaming and everything else like that. And he's like, where were you? About time you showed up. I had to deal with this all by myself. And he falls out. And he beat the snot out of a Herald of Galactus.
Yeah, Spider-Man, go.
He beat the snot out of... He beat the snot And I don't mean he tricked. I don't mean he lured. I don't mean he used the device on. I don't mean he had help. He beat the snot out of the file, out of a Herald of Galactus. Now, the only thing that's worse than that is like some 20-some-odd years later where Black Panther disables Silver Surfer with like pressure points and shit, you know? But this was the first instance of plot-induced stupidity that I think I was ever really subjected to, you know? And as a fight, it's awesome because if you're a Spider-Man fan, holy, look, Spider-Man, woo, and he kicked his ass and everything else like that, and that's kind of what I did as a kid, but, you know, in the back of my head, yeah, that shouldn't have happened. No, because remember the Spider-Man Superman panel I showed you where Spider-Man punches Superman and, you know, he hurts himself? That's kind of what should have happened here, you know, but it didn't. And, okay, you know, it didn't. So, you know, you let it ride. And I will continue to let it ride because, you know, I am a Spider-Man fan. You know, I like Fire Lord, but no, that is an ass-kicking amongst ass-kickings. You know, that is a true speed blitz. Not even just I run around and I punch it. That's him all over him. He just ate him up there. And that makes this my number 10 pick of top 10 Marvel stories that I like. Amazing Spider-Man 269 to 270.
So there you have it. This concludes episode number 190. Let us, if you want to count along with us, let us know what your top number 10 favorite Marvel story of all time is. We'll be doing one a week. So come back next week for number 9. In the meantime, if you want, you can go head over to MarvelousIggy.wordpress.com. We are officially back after our little winter break with more Marvel movie commentaries as I just uploaded both the Avengers and Iron Man 3. as I both uploaded both Avengers and Iron Man 3. Next week will be Thor Dark World. Also, you can check out Mr. Dragon's review finally on Dragon Age Inquisition. He didn't want to rush it out. He did everything, and it's a very
did he go platinum on everything too?
I think you should read his review because he was very mixed on it. Go read it, see what he thinks about Dragon Age Inquisition.
I'll read the review.
And he's a very hardcore Dragon Age fan. He has some very interesting things to say about it, about his thoughts in the game. For me, look forward to me next on my top five favorite games of 2014. That'll be out by this week. Just look forward to sharing you what games I thought were not the best, but my personal favorites. And of course, head over to thegreenlanterncore.com, which I write weekly reviews on the Green Lantern, on the core Green Lantern titles. Of course, they just wrapped up the Godhead storyline about 2 weeks ago. So go, if you're curious about that, hear my thoughts on that. Go read those. Go check those out. Let me let you know what you think. That's my plugs. Anything else before we go, guys? Anything else?
Watch Agent Carter. Yes. Agent Carter was fun.
Yes. Watch that.
Well, we will talk about that eventually. We will talk about that eventually.
But we can recommend it.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Brian, you have anything to say before we go?
Other than that, if you do stop by the Green Lantern boards, me and Taser lurk around there, as does Iggy. We're all frequent posters, so, you know. Come give us your hate on the boards directly, you know, if you want. We're there.
Or money. If you want to give us money, that's perfectly fine, too.
We do accept donations. We run several charitable organizations, such as Give Taser Money, Give Brian Money, and Give Ben Money. Those are charitable organizations.
By the way, Iggy Azalea can go F herself. I'm the true Iggy. Boom. Shots fired. We'll see y'all next week for episode number 191. Have a good day, everybody.
Oh, my God.
I still like Chris Yamaguchi. We'll be right back.